Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Welcome, everybody. This is David Lincoln with Lincoln on Lending. Glad to have you with us, and we're excited to have you on this Monday, May 10th. We say that at the top of every one of our programs just because we want so badly to make sure you know which program you're listening to when you download it. We are excited to get right into the program today. We have with us Tony Gallegos of Mortgage U talking about HUD updates, and we have also with us today David Bennett with Compass Analytics, giving us an update on rates. David Bennett, would you take us away and give us an update? What's going on interest rates? What's happening in the markets today, David?
For sure. Thanks for having me on there, Dave. So there's no economic data scheduled for this morning, but we still had a pretty big sell-off in the mortgage market as well as treasuries, and that is due to the 16 Euro nations finally agreeing on a package for not only Greece, but any nation that's facing instability. They agreed to it over the weekend, and it amounts to about 750 billion euros as a loan package, which is equivalent to $962 billion. This will include IMF backing. About 20% of the IMF backing is actually coming from U.S. dollars. And then consequently from that, debt from Greece, Italy, Ireland, Portugal, Spain has all rallied pretty aggressively in the morning. Equities around the world are up, so are commodities. You've got oil up $1.50 a barrel, the Dow up about 400 points. In treasuries, the 10-year is down a point, and the 30-year is down about 2.5 points. Mortgages are off between about 6 and 8 ticks, depending on which security you're looking at.
So that's interesting to kind of get a flavor of that. By the way, folks, I failed to mention at the top of the hour, as we're dealing with some more technology issues, that Joe Farr is on vacation and away from the office. So we really appreciate Dave Bennett with Compass Analytics to dive into this topic. So tell us what happened. Let's go into kind of what happened last week. Give us a little insights. There was a lot of market movement in the equities, drew a lot of attention to the markets, and give us an update.
Exactly. What should have been the headline last week was non-farm payrolls, which increased 290,000 against a consensus estimate of 190,000. What was surprising is the unemployment rate actually jumped up, even though jobs were added, from 9.7 to 9.9%. And the reason behind that being is that more people who were not actively seeking employment threw their hat in the ring and actually started seeking work again. So you saw the denominator actually grow there, and so 9.9% became the unemployment rate. But was actually the real headline happened on Thursday when the Dow was off around 270, and there actually has not been a cause has not been really found behind this. But supposedly what happened is someone was trying to sell 16 million shares of P&G stock and ended up selling 16 billion. It just caused within 6 minutes the Dow to seize. You had the Dow go from down 270 to down 990. The mortgage market was up 7 ticks before this happened. We ended up being up as much as a point. When people started putting it back together, we ended off the day probably up around 14, 15 ticks. And then where we are right now after the sell-off this morning, the 10-year is actually at the same exact spot where it was before this mishap occurred.
Interesting. Give us an update of what happened this coming week. First of all, before I go there, we've got a couple issues that we're dealing with, folks, and I apologize for the sounding a little distracted here. I am. It's only because when you do live radio like we do every week, we get to deal with
technology issues as they show up. So I apologize, David, for that. Well, last week, the non-farm payroll turning out stronger than was anticipated. I'd love to get your reflection and thought on that just briefly. Any more depth that you can give us and insights of how this is really going to affect mortgage rates long term?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough when you look at the non-farm numbers, both last month, this month, and the next few months, just because of the noise you're going to be getting from the census workers that are just being hired for a couple months, and then they're going to lose that employment. So these numbers are going to be skewed in one direction. If you look at, it was a 290 print on the headline, but there were pretty big upward revisions to the previous month, too. And I don't know how much stock people are really putting in those. When you look at other metrics like the U6, which includes people who are underemployed, who just become frustrated and no longer actively seeking employment, that number is still pretty elevated, around 17.1%.
Yeah, that's still very, very high and a little bit discouraging as we look at a lot of these forecasts of where we can kind of get a beat of where the market is going. Let's talk about this week, and let's get a little bit of idea of telling the folks what we can anticipate in the week ahead.
Well, we have the typical data that's going to be coming out. We have initial jobless claims on Thursday. We're going to have MBA mortgage applications on Wednesday morning. But then we also have retail sales on Friday, which I think a lot of people are looking at, seeing what the consumer's feeling about the economy in general, where we're heading. And I know that's been something that a lot of people on the equity side have been looking at, and given how interwoven we are in the mortgage market with that, I can anticipate if that number prints extremely in one direction or the next, we'll probably be feeling the effects of it.
David, it's good to have you bring this. I know for Compass you write the Morning Color every week, and you're kind of bringing all of your Compass Analytic clients up to date on what's going on. And if you give us a little background while Joe's gone, give us a little background of what Compass Analytics does, and just I'll let you get a quick word in about your company.
Yeah, what we primarily do for mortgage originators, we hedge their origination pipeline. So on a daily basis, we're looking at their loan originations on the previous day, looking at the pricing of it, seeing where they slot coupon by coupon, looking at best execution, where note rates are slotting, and then going and selling the necessary securities for them. And then essentially just other tools that we're rolling out is a rate sheet tool, which allows people to build in their different investor settings, and then how they're generating rate sheets now, you can actually build into the model where you can build best execution, best two of, average of the three, and so you can actually generate your rate sheet inside of our model now.
That's great. We appreciate so much you being a part of this, and hopefully we're going to have you back. I'd like to have you stay on the program or on the call or on the line, if you would, as we get into talking about the hot topic this week, which is HUD and getting an update on it. Love to have you participate in that, if at all possible. Would that be fine?
For sure.
Good. Folks, we'll be right back after this quick break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur. Get MBS prices as trades happen. Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com. MBSQuoteLine.com. 646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Hello, everybody. Good to have you back. Sorry for that rough start there, folks. It's always fun when you're doing something, and it starts off with just that. And one of the things, we lost Alice there for a minute. Alice, are you back in? It sounds like I think I hear you. There you are.
Yes, I am. I'm here, Dave. I'm not sure. You know how it ends up. Sometimes you can end up in cyberspace. And
yes.
Anyway, I am here.
Anyway, good to have you back. Bring us up to date on what's going on in the legislative world. There's so much, again, that's been going on. 3217 continues to stay as the headline issue for us in the industry. Give us an update.
Yes, yes. Actually, you know, the debate has begun, so we're watching all the amendments and watching all the jockeying for position going on. And really, I think the focal points right now that have been making the headlines are really the discussions that have been going on about the Consumer Financial Protection Agency. You know, there's been the concept that do we need another regulator? They would essentially be replacing the OTS. They would be this putting down enforcement rules to protect consumers from abusive lending practices. So how does an agency like this fit into what is already in existence? So it does look like that this agency is going to be moving forward. That part does seem to be apparent. Now, Republicans came up with an alternative to create an entity within the FDIC. That didn't get approval. The CFPA, as it's been described in the law right now, looks like it's going to be moving forward very similar to the way the law was written. The other thing about this, of course, that's been a big topic on our shows in weeks past has been the risk retention piece. Not a lot of discussion went on specifically about that in amendments, you know, that's obviously out in the press. Certainly side conversations may be going on right now. But the National Association of Realtors has also put out a paper on there, just like what we're trying to say. You know, really we want it removed. But as an entity or as an industry, if we have to pick a place to be, if this risk retention is going to stay in there, at least say that conforming A-paper, fully documented loans don't have to have any type of risk retention. And so that's the good news is the National Association of Realtors also chiming in to try and at least make a carve out for that aspect in the risk retention. Senator McCain brought up about Fannie and Freddie. You know, why don't we loop Fannie and Freddie into this bill and try and get their situation solved at the same time? And my thinking is, wow, that's like putting two gorillas in a room and now we have to fight both of them or try and get to the bottom of it. It really is. Let's just have one gorilla in the room at a time. Or the multiple chaos that's going on with the one, and Fannie and Freddie really, it does seem need to be a separate issue. So lots of discussion going on this week that we're watching for you, but no new actual finality to that yet. Also, later on the show today, we're going to be talking more about FHA reform and FHA in general. We have Tony Gallegos from MortgageU who's going to join us. But for now, for our legislative update, House Bill 5072 is the FHA Reform Act. Nothing specifically happened on that since last week, just simply that it was a voice vote passed in the House last week. FHA lender approval changes, effective May 20th, watch this, no formal extension of this yet. There is talk that maybe there will be one, but we're still waiting. So as of now, the lender approval change is still in effect this month. And then we have this laundry list of other bills that we're watching, you know, that impact several areas, really minor disclosure issues. Probably one of the ones, I guess, that could potentially get looped into this. We have a House Bill 3506 to eliminate privacy notice confusion, that it would not require lenders to issue privacy notices every single year as long as there haven't been any changes. We're also watching nonprofit mortgage licensing Clarification Act, that, you know, this has been out there for a few months, but to see what in general is going to be happening with the SAFE Act. You know, there's a couple of pieces hanging out there still on licensing and how much is going to apply and when for the banking regulator, for the banking entities as well as credit unions. Nothing has moved on that. That is all still up in the air. So as of now, I think, Dave, those are the highlights. I know we have a lot to talk about with FHA later in the program.
We certainly do. We'll be right back after this quick break. Thank you for staying.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? MortgageU is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. MortgageU instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. MortgageU has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call MortgageU today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lincoln.
Good to have you back, everybody. Love Live Radio. It is so much fun, and it's obviously an exciting tool to help you digest all that's going on in the industry. And another aspect of it is helping you manage your business. And an often neglected, often overlooked area is the area of accounting. We have with us today Andy Schell, who is a partner in Mortgage Banking Solutions, my partner, I'm proud to say. He's a CPA, CMB, and just one of the most knowledgeable guys in the area of accounting. Andy, talk to us about predicting the future, if you wouldn't mind. It's difficult to do. What is that all about?
Well, thanks, Dave. It's great to be on the show. And, you know, just listening now to Alice talk about the legislative update, it would really be awesome if we could predict the future and know what components of those bills are really going to land. What's going to happen with the whole retention thing? Being able to predict the future would be something that would be awesome, but the reality is you really can't do it. It's just not possible, because if you did, I'd own my own island and wouldn't be here on the program today. But what we do know, what we do have are predictors. We can't really predict the future, but we can review predictors of future behavior. We do it every day in mortgage banking. Whenever we make a loan to a customer, we are predicting their behavior. Banks do it, mortgage banks do it, and it's something that's an essential part of lending. Well, it also applies to running your business, because there are predictors of future events that can affect the cash flow of a business. Like, for example, your funding line. You're a mortgage bank and you have your funding facility in place. Well, what happens if in 3 or 4 months your warehouse lines are going to be need to be larger because your volume's growing? Well, anybody that's working with a warehouse line lender knows it takes 2-3 months to get an approval. So you can't wait until all of a sudden it's near the end of the month, your pipeline's bulged, you don't have funding facility. And what are you going to do, tell everybody, whoops, sorry, I can't fund? You have to be able to predict these things. That could be a really, really bad day for a mortgage bank. So how do you predict it? Well, you look at the predictors of future activity. You do a volume forecast, and you do all of this within what's called a financial forecast. So a financial forecast is really just a whole bunch of information all pulled together that calculates the next step. It calculates cash flow forecast. It calculates how much money you're going to make. So you look at what your volume is going to be. You look at all of the components that drive income. You're going to look at gain on sale and fee income, and you throw all of the income components together, take all of your expenses, throw all of the expenses together, and then you're starting to be able to look at within any month how much money you're going to make. Take in all your expenses, throw in all your income. What's your net income? And net income in a mortgage bank usually drives cash. So you can then drive a cash flow forecast. We even use a financial forecasting tool that calculates how much staff you're going to need. Based on volume changes in production, we'll know how many more processors we need or more underwriters we need. So we have a forecasting tool that we use that goes forward 24 months and looks at the cash. It even calculates return on investment for the investors. We have a number of clients that are looking at putting money into companies, and they need to know what their ROI is going to be. And this financial forecast does that. And last but not least, it also will calculate leverage ratios. I was talking about the warehouse line lenders. Warehouse line lenders have certain bank covenants that they require all mortgage bankers to adhere to. And one of them is your leverage ratio. And your leverage ratio is affected by your volume of fundings and how much you're using the warehouse line. If you grow too fast and exceed your debt covenant, the warehouse line lender could shut you off. So you've got to pay attention to your volume and your income and have an idea, even if it's a guess. I mean, we all know it's a guess, but it's an educated guess because we've been in the market. We have an idea what's going to happen, and that way you can look forward 90 days and see how much cash you're going to need and then get warehouse line facilities in place to fund that. All of the Fortune 500 companies in the country do this. It's an important tool. It's an essential tool. Every mortgage banker in the country should have a financial forecast that then becomes their budget.
It's so important, Andy, that we bring that. And, folks, we're going to be bringing you the Accounting Corner starting every week, starting this week. Every week we're going to bring you tips of how to begin to address accounting issues. Our goal is to move accounting out from behind the stacks, down the basement, in the forefront of your mind, as to bring these issues that Andy's going to be talking about. Stay tuned each week as we bring you accounting tips from the Accounting Corner. Andy, thank you so much for joining in on the program today and being a part of it. Glad to have you, and we look forward to having you back.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
Folks, we'll take a quick break, and we're going to be back with Tony Gallegos of Mortgage U talking about so many issues going on with HUD. I can't wait to get into this. I'm looking at all the notes as we're getting ready here, and we're dealing with computer crashes and everything else. Folks, this is an important segment you're not going to want to miss. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry. Whether you need a new warehouse line, are making the transition from broker to banker, are interested in mergers and acquisitions, or anything in between, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit, broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs. If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact our Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Thank you so much for being a part of the program today. This is Dave Licken. This is Licken on Lending. We are excited to have so many folks from PMI across the country. PMI has become a sponsor of this program, and we're so excited to be talking about it. In fact, we're going to be doing a show from New York in Ralph Armenta of PMI is orchestrating this. I'm so excited about this. We're going to be doing a show from the MBA's Secondary Marketing Conference at the end of the month. So stay tuned. We'll be bringing you more about that. Today we have as a special guest someone that we've had here before. He's no stranger to Licken on Lending, our radio program. Just a wealth of information. And, folks, if you could see the notes of all we're going to try to cover here today, it is amazing. Welcome to the program, Tony Gallegos. He's a 22-year veteran of the mortgage industry, and he has worked with some of the key executives that are now running HUD. There's no one more qualified, more in touch and on top of the issues that are facing us. Tony, welcome to the program. Good to have you here. Tony, it's just one more deal. Alice, are you there? I think we may have lost
Tony.
Yes, I am. We got to go find Tony and bring him in here and get him live and hooked up. It's one of those situations. We had a little of a challenge with Tony for a while trying to find him, and he had some real delays. It was very difficult to hear him, and then we brought him on. Tony, are you on the program? Have we found you?
You know what, David? I have my backup one, so excuse the connection. I know we had some technology, but I kept the connection that I had originally on in case this did not work. So.
Well, we're glad to have you on here. Yes, it does sound not quite ideal, but you know what? We can hear you. And more importantly, if the folks have to strain their ears just a little bit harder to listen to you, let's get into these hot topics. Folks, there is a lot of development going on, as we started saying, at HUD. Alice, lead this discussion off, please.
Okay. Well, Tony, we're glad to have you here. I know there's so much to talk about, and I know one of the first things that people are concerned about is FHA going to be able to sustain this type of situation long term? Where does the Capital Reserve stand up? How does the Capital Reserve stand up to all the activity and the delinquencies, defaults, foreclosures, combined with the stress on FHA right now?
Right. You know, that's a very relevant question, and that's typically one of the things that whether you're speaking with lenders or politicians on the Hill, is how the Capital Reserve is going to stand up. Is the government going to have to come in and relieve that and help it? And according to what we're hearing is the fund, the way it looks right now, is they are expecting not to have any type of contribution from the federal government, because that's very important to them, because the key component, HUD started in 1934, and since 1934, except when they started the agency, HUD has never had any type of government assistance. It's always run on itself. And one of the key things that is very important to understand with the leadership within HUD, and this is very unusual from the past, the leadership of HUD, Dave Stevens and Vicky Bott, who runs single family residence, they all come from major mortgage bankers, from Wells Fargo. They have been in the business for 20 to 30 years. And again, they know and understand the mortgage business, and they are running this like a business instead of so much a government agency. While it is a government agency, number one of all importance is the saving and taking care of this fund. And this has taken us to what's going on and what the House Financial Services Committee approved last week. And the thing to remember is everything that HUD is doing is focused on saving this fund, exactly what you were talking about. And with the shrinking FHA capital reserves recently addressed by the House Financial Services Committee, representatives are faced with trying to balance FHA's significant role in providing and saving our mortgage market, especially for first-time and moderate-income homebuyers, with the need to increase the agency's reserves to the legally mandated levels of 2%. Currently, the FHA reserves have fallen to approximately 0.53% of the value of the FHA-insured mortgage loans. What's important to realize, though, is this, if you're comparing apples with apples or apples to oranges, and that's in many cases what's happening, when we talk about the reserve requirements, many times it's compared to Fannie and Freddie. Fannie Freddie only has to reserve for what they're expecting the losses to be over the next year, whereas HUD is federally mandated to reserve what they expect that losses are for the next 30 years. So it really is not an apples-to-apples comparison. So really, HUD is in a much better position than it appears to than, let's say, Fannie or Freddie. However, because they have to cover the reserves for the next 30 years, of the expected losses for the next 30 years, that's how this reserve fund is calculated. Another important component to remember is that at the start of 2009, HUD had $27.2 billion at the start of the year, and at the end, they had 30.7%. And doing some rough calculations, what that means is they collected enough for those loans that were funded or endorsed during 2009 for a 6% coverage. So there is an increase in the amount the reserves was coming on, but there are several different reasons why this reserve dropped so low. And this is a lot of what HUD is trying to address. So that's going back into what HUD is talking about, where they're trying to balance maintain that balancing act between making sure the reserve fund is going back up to the legally mandated level and also keeping with the mandate of what they're there for. So there are a couple things that happened. The KID committee last week did approve the FHA to raise the annual mortgage insurance premium from its current level up to 1.5. That does not mean they're going to go to 1.5, but it will allow HUD the authority to go up to 1.5 if they deem it is necessary. Another move is this move is designed to move some of the costs from the mortgage insurance from the upfront mortgage insurance, which is paid at closing, to the annual portion of the premium, which is prorated monthly and added to the monthly mortgage amounts. And the reason this is important, what they have found is when you're uploading and putting most of the insurance in the upfront mortgage insurance, you're financing it and thus putting more risk to the fund and causing making the loan more upside down, since many times most borrowers, especially on purchase transactions, are putting the minimum amount of 3.5%. So what they said is
–
I'm sorry.
Go ahead and finish your thought there. Yeah, go ahead and finish your thought. I got a couple questions.
Okay, sure. And what that is saying is by moving more of this to paying on the monthly mortgage insurance, it's going to enable the people that are actually utilizing this fund to pay for it. And the actuarial calculations have shown that it's also going to rebuild the fund much faster. Dave, you had a question?
Yeah, the question is, you said they are gradually raising it to 1.5. Am I correct? From the current rate of 55. Or just slightly over a half a point. So they're raising that. What is the probability of them – any read on the probability of that actually happening? They've approved it, allowed it to happen. What's the probability of that?
Okay. What the key thing is, it's not saying that they are going to take it to 1.5%. By all readings and analysis, I know that you've been heavily involved with following this too. It's not going to go to 1.5%. From what I'm hearing is they're going to take it up from anywhere from 0.75 to 1.1. That is the range. However, it will give HUD authority to take it up to 1.5% if they deem it necessary for the fund.
And keeping in mind, it still has to go through the Senate. It's only a House bill at the moment.
Okay, that's right. Good point. Really good point. I mean, what would deem it necessary? Help our audience understand what would be factors that would result in it deeming it necessary. I think it's pretty obvious, but let's make sure we get that stated.
Okay. Well, number one is if the insurance fund continues to be depleted and go lower. Another thing is if property prices continue to lower and the defaults continue to rise. However, one of the good things is recently we have found that the HUD default rates have stabilized and actually have gone down slightly.
Yeah, I think that it's important to realize, folks, we got to keep an eye on this fund. And I know you're going to be talking a little bit later as I look at your notes here about the market share, which is really caused for a lot of this. Let's get into talking about the link between renting and buying and how that affects FHA loans.
Okay, and Dave, this is going back into what we, this is that balancing act that HUD is trying to really maintain. Again, as I stated, the business leader, the leaders within HUD are business people, and they are trying to run it like a business. Actually, the term that they always say is we are an insurance fund, and while we have known that FHA is an insurance company per se that's run by the federal government, it is an insurance company, and they say thus we have to run it and again, protect this fund. So one of the things that you can control this, you can make the quality of FHA loans so high and mitigate the amount of defaults that you're having. But again, it's also important and critical to remember the charter of FHA. It was put in place to allow borrowers who do not qualify through traditional means. And it gives them an avenue. So again, it's that balancing act of trying to say, you know what, we have to run this like a business. We don't want to go to the taxpayers to bail us out. However, we also have to be cognizant of what our charter is, and that really is what it is. Turning renters who qualify, that's the key thing, not just any renter. Qualified people that are likely to qualify and pay the mortgage and service the mortgage. So that is really the charter of what they're looking for. And again, it's to assist first-time home buyers, people who have been credit challenged, but under FHA guidelines, look as if they will perform on the loan. And again, it's also concerned with moderate income buyers who don't qualify. And then it also allows for much lower down payment requirements. And the other component to the charter that's outside of the charter is FHA has increased so much in market share, and it's such a large proportion of first-time home buyers that it is also critical to the mortgage market. So this is the stuff that they have to balance. And again, in this House committee bill, not taking it down to a 5% requirement, but leaving it at 3.5%, whereas conventional mortgage products in a lot of areas are anywhere from 10 to 20%, it really does. It really is an important component to our total overall mortgage market in the United States.
You know, I'd like to, on that market share issue, I know the private mortgage insurance companies are trying to move forward with much more press, and actually I was speaking with one group of mortgage insurance companies last week, and their account execs trying to help them go, okay, how does PMI stack up to FHA? And the private mortgage insurers have made some changes recently and are thinking about, I think, some future changes to be more competitive. How do you think FHA is going to look at that? Are they going to be happy that the PMI is coming back into play a little bit better? On, you know, certainly not on 3% down, but definitely on more 5 and 10% down loans.
You know, Allison, you know, in my opinion, I think it's a double-edged sword. I think that FHA is a little nervous in many cases, in many areas of the country. They are the predominant lending or mortgage facility for getting a loan, whereas that's what they're there for. However, they are very concerned about being so concentrated in certain areas, and in many areas, that's where they're having economic issues. So I believe that they'll be happy that it's going to spread the risk out amongst some of the PMI companies. So that's just the risk mitigation type of that they're looking at. However, one of the things that they are concerned about that has happened since so much market share has gone to FHA, the average FICO score has risen by over 70 points. So one of the things that they're concerned about is if it goes back to that, that the overall quality will go down. Because before this, as we saw with the market share, FHA was in a certain way being adversely selected. If you couldn't qualify for Fannie Freddie, you went over to FHA, which lowered the average FICO score and the quality of the loans.
That's really a good point. And now the fact that PMI is a great example, has gotten itself recapitalized. They're in one of the strongest positions they have been in years. In fact, there's a number of people that are saying that PMI stock is now in a buy mode. I know a number of the stock pickers and the guys that are pointing people at what stocks to buy are saying, go pick up PMI stock. I would assume that FHA, you really bring out a great point here. FHA, in this last market cycle, they couldn't get a loan to go through FHA for anything. They lost so much market share. It's that old saying, be careful what you wish for. You're going to get it. And they got it overrun by the product. And now they're in this situation. But in many ways, they were overrun at a time where things were contracted. Do you have any feel, Tony, as you talk to your old associates and that are now their key people at HUD, as to what the losses are, what they're projecting for losses? It's encouraging to hear you say that the losses are beginning to, the hits on the fund are beginning to reduce, subside. That's great news. Any idea, are they getting any feel for what the losses, they're projecting losses to be moving forward?
You know, Dave, I don't have the actual number in front of me, but again, based upon the discussions and also the research that I've conducted, it does, and they do feel strongly that the losses have stabilized, and they're in a position, especially with these changes that they are proposing to make with the monthly mortgage insurance increases, that it is going to stabilize. So, you know, weighing all that stuff, they feel fairly comfortable with that. The other thing that they're doing is that, and they've never had this, they've hired a chief credit risk manager, and it really is quite amazing. As long as this organization has been in business, they've never had a chief credit officer, and what they're going to be doing is they're going to be looking and carefully analyzing how the different tranches are performing. So they feel fairly confident. A lot of the areas that saw increased or decreased values have really looked as if they're stabilizing. And one of the key points that HUD has looked at is they found that the likelihood of people walking away being upside down is if the value fell more than 20%, the likelihood of people walking away, and this has never happened before, that's where these loans, the likelihood of loans of defaulting occur. So they have seen great stabilization in those areas that they've had major or drastic decreases in property values. And what I was told is in many areas they've been stabilized for 4 to 6 months, the default rates have stabilized accordingly.
It's encouraging to see that we have that stabilization. David Bennett, you're on the phone. As you listen to this discussion, we invite you into the dialogue with us. Is there anything that leaps out that you have questions for Tony on?
Yeah, it was just kind of when you say that they're very exposed to certain zip codes. So, like, if they look at different scenarios, if those zip codes were to experience another 5, 10% home price depreciation, would that put them at risk?
You know what? It can put them at risk. And the key number is a loss of this is where they're seeing the substantial or significant losses is once a home loses at least 20% value, and it's going again, and sometimes it can be just a little bit that can really weigh upon it, but that 20% area is the key indicator of where people are going to walk away from their home if they're upside down. Even if they're making the payment.
And that's from the original. I want to point out that's from the the original value, the original point that they bought the home. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct, Dave. And then that also goes back into why they want to move the much of the mortgage insurance premium to save their fund from the upfront, because that puts up borrowers even more upside down, and they want to put it more on the honest as you hold that FHA loan. So, but to answer your question and going back into it, yes, they do feel that that could impact it. But one of the issues that we've seen for some of these markets is you cannot really, in essence, redline per zip code. The lowest you can really go to or address is really at a metropolitan area. So that's what makes it a little harder. But they do have concerns if it continues to decrease, it can impact their performance.
Alice, I know you're getting around and talking to a lot of these hawks, and what's the flavor or the overall mood within these hawks as you're talking to the various ones around the country?
Well, you know, I always have to say they're all really good people. You know, a lot of folks and people don't get a chance to actually meet people at FHA's home ownership centers, and they're all really good people trying to do the right thing and do the right job. But I have to tell you that the audit scenarios are probably the biggest ones that are getting the most attention right now, and that is the post-closing reviews, the issues related to what people are getting written up for, and therefore the audits and the audit responses. I mean, HUD really is full force going to say, if you're not running your shop the way we expect you to by our guidelines with a fully implemented quality control plan and control over your operation and risk, as Tony's alluding to, you will have problems and we don't want you to keep doing FHA. So, you know, internally they're hoping for more staff, trying to get beefed up, but their focus is shifting or having to be on the audit side.
And Alice, you bring up a very important component, and I know when we were at the Philadelphia Home Ownership Center, they spoke to us on how they're going to start looking at the PETRs and the change in philosophy of what that is, and again, looking at these post audits and especially the loans that are defaulting or at least 60 to 90 days down. So I know that you've done a lot of work on that.
Tony, a lot of folks don't know what a PETRs is. For those that aren't actively involved in the HUD program, would you want to give that's one of our famous HUD acronyms we use. You want to explain what that is?
I'm sorry about that. Yes, a PETR is a post-endorsement training review, and what it's done is it's a review that of a lender's loan or endorsed loan after the loan is endorsed, and they give a review. And previously in the past, and this is what, and Alice, I'm not trying to steal your thunder. It's what it is, a post-endorsement training review. And while the lenders did have to reply to them, HUD almost had a philosophy that it was a training mechanism. And now what they are going to do is the PETRs or the post-endorsement training reviews, PETRs are going to be utilized as an endorsement mechanism. And it's going to what Alice was saying is HUD is going to really do a lot of audits and reviews. And one of the heavy mechanisms that they're going to use is not only the PETRs, but also they're going to be looking heavily at the comp ratio in HUD Neighborhood Watch. And that's a whole other discussion. And I know, Alice, you've been heavily involved with that. Any background on or information that you think would be useful?
Well, yeah, I think we got into we were using or HUD referenced that it was a training thing, but the post endorsement technical reviews are really just like have been the report card, and like Tony's saying, they're going to be changing them into something that's going to be really used as an enforcement tool. So I think just really what lenders have to be careful of and be very aware of is it's really tough to backpedal on this. One of the more surprising developments we've seen recently is audits on the brokers. So you don't have underwriting authority, you've been sponsored, but the audit report that you're getting from FHA is now they want to review all your early payment defaults, and you're sitting there, you know, going, well, wait a minute, I didn't make the loan decision, how come they want to dissect my activities within this? But they do, they follow the trail for delinquencies. We've got several customers, their compare ratio is high, as Tony alluded to, that the idea of where do I stand with my delinquencies compared to the national delinquency rate, and they're coming in and checking even the brokers who didn't have underwriting authority and for other factors in the loan. Could they have spotted fraud? Is there a pattern of not managing things closely?
We're going to be back on this important topic right after this word. Stay tuned.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, quality control, quality control plans, fraud
I'll make a mention of that.
And
so
even web-based
AM
quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzeltrot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzeltrot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzeltrot, the single source solution for your quality control needs. And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lickin' on Lending Show.
Oh, boy, I love it when you think you got your mic on. You're talking to your producer there. We do have some folks listening from Florida, and that's what we're just hearing about. We've got folks, a live radio station from Sarasota. Welcome, and we thank you so much for listening in on this. There's so much going on, and we appreciate the media picking up a lot more and looking on lending. There's a lot more to that. So anyway, I got excited about that and forgot to hit the mute button when a producer whispered that in my ear, so I apologize for speaking over that important spot. Alice, you were talking just briefly about how people need to start viewing the Peters Report differently and how it relates to their compare ratio. We know very well that that perspective has not been fully appreciated by everyone out there, Alice. If you could just cover that really thoroughly, how important it is that they start viewing the Peters Report differently and the importance of the compare ratio, and any sense also of what we should really shoot at a compare ratio as an objective?
Well, compare ratio in terms of an objective can be something that can vary by company. I mean, I've met owners of mid-sized, smaller-sized companies who say, I can manage my risk and I'm comfortable at a slightly higher compare ratio, meaning, I'm in that 130, 140% range, maybe 150, or I don't mind even going over 150 if I'm going to be comfortable that FHA is going to insure my loans. 150% compare ratio, meaning, for example, if the national delinquency rate is at 5%, your delinquency rate is at 7.5%, you're 150% of the national rate, but as a lender, you may be comfortable there because that's your niche. You're getting slightly higher dividends or margins on these loans. We see a lot of people walking out of that space. They don't want to be the company on the street that's going to take higher risk FHAs. So most companies want to try and keep well down below around 100% using that national average as your range. If your default rate is higher than the national average, they're looking at what is causing it, where are they lending, and what are they doing on refer loans. Tony and I did an analysis for a lender recently, and they just didn't react fast enough to change. When you know your compare ratio is too high, and you say, you know what, a credit score of 640 just is not keeping my defaults under control. Should I raise that? Is that my solution? You have to do the analysis, make sure that's really going to cause the change that you need, and is it really the right place for a change? Tony, you can talk to that with your analysis on compare ratios and the denominator factor, right?
That's absolutely correct, and you've hit an important component in that. Not only are they looking at lenders, but they're looking at brokers. And I know that, Alice, you have worked with some of those. So it's very important, the variables or the elements or what is contributing to those default factors could differ. Many times there's a lot of commonalities, but in certain circumstances or a lot of circumstances, there can be commonalities are causes that are unique to you as a lender. So what HUD is saying is, okay, you know what, go ahead and do these loans. It used to be, and Alice, you were speaking about some of those lenders that worked within the space of having a 125 to 160 comp ratio, and they're saying, well, as long as I executed properly on this, the loan was going to be endorsed, I was going to be covered. However, not only now, we're working in an environment that not only now do you have to adhere and execute the HUD guidelines, you also have to manage to the comp ratio, and in that neighborhood, you're going to be in extreme danger. Because what I have found working with comp ratios for a lender is many times once it gets over that 110 range, it can jump very, very quickly to the 130, 150, 160, 170 range. And again, right now, once you get to that 150, 160 range with HUD, they're looking very closely at those lenders, and those are the ones they're picking to audit. So that's one of the tools, again, that they're utilizing, that comp ratio.
I would also say watch your EPDs, watch your early payment defaults, because I've seen lenders, they have no compare ratio problem, but all of a sudden there's a rash of EPDs. So the ratio itself is low, but the loans in that ratio are all per early payment defaults. So that's a separate and unique problem, you know, that lenders want to watch for.
Go ahead, Tony. I want one thing I'd interject right there, because what we're hearing from a lot of our clients is, Dave, we've really originated to the high end of the spectrum, but because we're originated loans in a higher or property values have fallen off as much as they have, we're getting a lot of loan modification companies telling and advising borrowers that we made them a loan on to default on their loan, and it's crushing us when it comes to our compare ratio. Our default ratios are shooting up because they're being told to default even though they can afford it. Any sense of how serious this is?
Well, here's the way that, and I'm just taking this from some of the people that I've worked with, is if this is happening in mass in certain regional or state areas, then that default rate, that compare ratio is going to shift. So it should be reflected for all lenders in their compare ratios. If one lender is being adversely selected for that type of maneuver, then yes, it can impact it. But if it's generally hitting a certain geographic area, it should, because that compare ratio and how it's calculated changes every month. It's based upon the total lender. So it should be reflected in the compare ratio.
It's something that to be aware of, that, you know, number one is that folks, the loan modification companies that are out there that are telling people to default, they could have an impact on it. You should be staying on top of these numbers. Alice, you can bring everyone up to date on where they can find their compare ratio. I'm amazed at the number of people that do not know how to locate their compare ratio. So let's cover that real quickly.
Well, if you probably the simplest way is if you go into your search engine and put in Neighborhood Watch. And you can put, if you're just the general public, you can even put Neighborhood Watch Public View. It should come up as one of your first hits. At least it does for mine. I suppose there's people out there who have different search habits than I do. Maybe yours is on page two. But
should be there at the top, pretty close.
Yeah, but there's a public view where you don't even need an ID number. But if you are a lender, an FHA-approved lender, you can get to it multiple ways. You can look it up in FHA Connection. You have Neighborhood Watch. You look at your statistics, and there are some variables on that website for selecting to get the right report view. If you're a DE lender, you want to make sure you're looking at your numbers as a DE lender. I think then you also can get to it through HUD's main website, but you would need your own company's password and ID as for FHA Connection in order to see loan-level information. The public view gives you general information just by region. But you can look up anybody's compare ratio. It'll be interesting to see what happens to all that, you know, as we lose that data. It's one of the downsides of the move for FHA to stop approving brokers. So once loan correspondents aren't a part of the approval process anymore, they will fall out of Neighborhood Watch. And if I'm a wholesaler trying to manage my risk, I am not going to be able to see those individual companies as sorted information within FHA, at least the way it's laid out now. We're hoping for some improvements in FHA Connection so that as a lender I can still see my defaults, but I won't get aggregated information anymore like I can today.
You know, Al, it's one of the things that – I'm sorry, go ahead, Dave.
Go ahead, Ann. No, I said go ahead. We're talking over you. Go ahead, Tony. I'll let you run.
It's one of the things I know that many of the large lenders are doing is they are building up models or computer models where so they can really copy the whole process. So in a certain way, they can measure where the compare ratio is for their own correspondents. So they'll be doing that internally, and actually that's the wise way of doing it.
Well, I'd like to know their default rate across all companies. You know what I mean? And then so that if I know, are they just selling me the good high credit score stuff, but really they've got a bunch of low credit score stuff that's going to another lender that they're trying to hide. You know, I don't know. I'd like to see. I would miss the aggregate data, I think, as a wholesaler.
Good point.
What can brokers do to fix their issue? Is there things they can specifically do? Let's cover those points real fast. We have about six minutes left in the program today, and we want to cover HECM. So what can they do? Is there anything they can do specifically to improve their ratio?
Tony, you want to go ahead?
Sure. You know, they really have to really copy a lot of the same processes and procedures that the major lenders are doing, because this is something that HUD is looking at. What they have to do is, okay, they have to have a record. These are the loans that defaulted. What are the attributes of these loans that defaulted? And then once you figure or analyze what those attributes are, then while the lenders that they're wholesaling to may not have certain credit overlays, what they have to do, you know, really in a way, is pre-underwrite their loans, even though the wholesaler is going to underwrite it. They have to pre-underwrite their loans and say, you know what, I have a high default ratio. If it has this type of attributes, I have to put in place a credit overlay to say that I cannot do these loans until I get my compare ratio to the appropriate level.
That's so counterintuitive to a broker who's not normally trying to think that they have to be in control of underwriting risk, but, you know, that is certainly one way to, you know, to look at it, and maybe consider that if you're in a high-risk market, if that's your place where you originate. The other thing I guess I would throw in is just make sure you don't have fraud, because I'm going to say most of the time, if they're looking down at the broker level and you have EPDs, they're going to zero in on, is that a particular loan officer? Is that a particular real estate office? What's going on with that appraisal? Where are those properties, and you've got to be 1,000% sure you don't have any kind of misrepresentation going on in those files.
We're going to have to continue this discussion on next week. Tony, I'm looking at your notes here, and I think it's important that we give an update on reverse mortgages. Heckams, could you give us a quick update? We have 4 minutes left of the program.
On Heckam loans? Sorry, you broke up, Dave.
Yes, on the Heckam loans.
Okay. One of the things with loans is because of the economics posed with reverse mortgages, the short effect loan terms of about 6 years on the average and declining home values nationwide, few private sector insurers want to offer these reverse mortgages anymore. And this means that the FHA absolutely dominates the market, and it's a market that is producing large losses. So one of the good news is, at least for HUD, is that the home equity conversion mortgages, HECMs, are less popular. Applications are down 54% compared to last year, and the endorsements have fallen 21.8%. Given that the interest rates are ridiculously low, the likely explanation for this reduced HECM activity, again, is falling equity values, which means far smaller reverse mortgage amounts. However, what that has meant is for those HECM loans that have been placed, especially in the years that we had high increases in property values, many of these loans are upside down, so the actuarial tables are not working out. And what that means is HUD is heavily looking at what type of HECM loans they can do. They are incurring huge losses or large losses in comparison to what their outstanding balances are. A few years ago, I think we all heard that these were the darlings of FHA or the darlings within the mortgage industry. But because of decreased property prices, stability and the total market share of the loans that are being done, there's a lot of concern, and they're going to be looking at what they can do to stabilize that fund. You know, really quickly, in a nutshell, that's what's going on with the HECM loans.
Tony, thank you so much for being a part of the program again. There's just so much information here we'd love to try to cover. Again, our guest today has been Tony Gallegos. He is with Mortgage U. He's one of Alice's associates. They are on top of so many of the issues related to all that's going on with HUD. Tony, we're just very grateful to have you on there. Also on the program today with us was David Bennett. David is with Compass Analytics. He also writes the morning Compass's Morning Color, gives out the trends of what interest rates are doing, what's going on. He's a graduate of Princeton University, formerly with Lehman Brothers. David, it was a pleasure to have you. We're glad glad to have you fill in for Joe, and hope you'll come back and be a part of our program again in the near future. Alice, as always, it is such a pleasure to have you here helping digest these issues. Next week, we're going to be continuing our discussion on HUD. We're going to really drill into the questions that you have. Email me at dlykken@mortgagebankingsolutions, and we'll be bringing up and discussing specifically what's going on. Also, welcome your feedback on the program, and by all means, pass this program on to others in the industry so that they are benefiting from this. Our goal is to be the one-stop shop where you can go each week and know everything important that's going on in our industry, and we'll help you focus on. Anyway, great to have you here. Have a great week, folks. stay tuned and be back with us next week. Thank you.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.